Well, you can. I'll accept that. That's a wonderful tribute. I'm deeply honored to be here today. This is a distinct privilege for me. The gathering is special because I was privileged for more than 20 years to have Mel Bradford as a friend and fellow conspirator. This began at a stage back in our careers where neither of us had attained to quite the distinction on his part and acknowledgement on my own part that came to us in subsequent years. He was well known to me as a writer for National Review and added him as a writer for the Dallas Times Herald, which was the local newspaper, which I had turned hard right upon receiving direction of the editorial page in the early 1970s. And so it was inevitable that we should get together, and it was likewise inevitable that we should become friends, which we did. And I value and cherish my friendship with him for many years, right up, not just for many years, but right up to the end, up to the very end. We were conspiring. In fact, the night that he was, as we Southerners say, took sick, we were out in Midland, Texas, at a meeting of the Landrum Society. That's the Texas version of the Philadelphia Society. Patterned on Commodore Lipset's bylaws and outlook. And we were doing something that I suppose was rash and over-ambitious for the people who had only been at this conservative intellectual fellowship thing for a very short time. We were trying to found a magazine. My wife, Nancy Taylor Murchison, exclaims, still to this day, with some joy, "What does the world want with more magazines? More paper?" But again, why not? There are magazines for Macintosh computer aficionados, magazines for transvestites, there are even magazines for liberals. And I see no reason the Texas conservatives could not have their own magazine. Mel and I could not find any major impediment to this endeavor, and so there we were in Midland, Texas, at the Petroleum Club on a hard, harsh winter evening in West Texas. Some deep-pocketed Texans at the table with us. And you think you've seen Southern charm. You haven't seen Southern charm until you've been with a Southerner trying to coach filthy Ruger out of potential donors to a conservative magazine. That night of which I speak, Melvin Eustace Bradford glowed and exuded. He could have talked Harry Jaffa into liking Jefferson Davis. Tougher assignment, he could have talked Jefferson Davis into liking Harry Jackson. We rose at length, drained our whiskey glasses, made sure we consumed every morsel of the steaks in front of us on the table, because no real Texan ever leaves untouched a morsel of politically incorrect vittles. And off we went into the night. Never again did I see Mel in the flesh. We spoke by phone the night before his operation. We said to each other a lot of sweet, fond things. I'm glad I said it. And that's all I'm going to say about it. By the way, we found it in the magazine. It's called The Texas Republic. Here's the last extant copy of it in Charleston, South Carolina today. And it's a magazine, I think, that Mel would have been proud to edit. He was going to be the editor of our Literature and Life section, patterned on the back of the book in National Review. He would have done it in his distinctive way. When Mel died, we could think of no one better to turn that assignment over to than Tom Lankus, who was conducting the back of the book for us presently and for as long as this magazine endured, as far as I'm concerned. But I think Mel would be a little more astonished at the magazine's acceptance. He might also so not to have been so, so astonished. No one I've ever known knew more about herself. And I think that is a not only a worthwhile but also a very significant property to have at this time of, in our culture, at this time in our society's history. We live in a time when the Southern way of doing, that the way of doing that Mel Bradford celebrated in all of his major works, intersects with a particular poignancy, it seems to me, and a fittedness, the culture of that country, in a reproachful way. The Southern way of life is not the American way of life in every respect today. The country's in a mess. We all acknowledge this. It's a mess, but it's a mess because of the Southern way of life. Too much civility, too much tradition and sense of history, too much resistance to centralization. Is that the problem? I don't think so. Or is the problem too much fragmentation, too much spiritual vacuity, too much disdain for the grassroots, and correspondingly too much admiration for the iron-fisted bureaucrats, so much admired in frozen domains like, well, what, North Adams, Michigan, no doubt. But what do you think? What do you think what Mel would have thought? That's not a particularly hard question to answer. But we're here stretched far enough to affirm that finally, after 125 years, the Southern way of life has proved itself. I'm not so sure, because I never ask it. Nor do I make it a habit to read the minds of folks unable to tell me that I don't have the vaguest idea of what I'm talking about. But I want to think along with you today and invite you to think along with me as to this question that I think no record can be passed by. Has the Southern way of life proved itself to the extent that perhaps now the war is over and the result has been decided in our favor? Reason along with me then. And with Professor Bill Harris. Now, typing these remarks, following Professor Harris's example, that's what I like about the South. The professor led the way in an epic poem of some decades ago, a poem which I don't think Bill would have found well on the level of Beowulf. That's what I like about the South. He began by saying, "Let's go down to Alabama. There we'll see my dear old Manny." And I should add to you that we know parenthetically why he chose Alabama rather than Mississippi. The professor continued then to elucidate. "She's frying eggs and she's boiling honey, and that's what I like about the South. Not to mention the sweetest government by listening. Baked ribs and candied yams, sugar cured Virginia hams and berried jams, popcorn bread and black-eyed peas and all that finger snapping stuff makes me hungry as I stand here and talk that." Yeah, I think you get the idea. Bill spoke mouth-wateringly for multitudes. But most of all, he gave us an invaluable clue. There's something special about the South. Something worth singing about. Something that the Battleground Republic, with all this Yankee resonance, cannot drown out today. Least of all in these soulless, searching times that we call the 1990s. Something so special about the South that there was a consonant to Mel Bradford's note. Inspired it. Underlay the grand theories he spun and the notable ideas that he laid out for our edification. Let's see if we can figure out what it is that's special about the South. Let's go down to Alabama. There we'll say yes, ma'am, to Manny. Thank you, and you're most kindly welcome. Would you please, and all the ceremonious people honoring things that form the patina of Southern Sonoti. That's one thing I like about the South. Southern manners, Southern cordiality. And I say the patina because the reality is more than words. Southerners use each other with a gentleness and a respect that practically alone today stand against the social collapse of the past 30 years. Whose dismal effects, I'm hardly alone in observing, especially in settings together in this one. Anger, jealousy, self-aggrandizement, foul language, disrespect for both friends as well as strangers. Why, of course, we have it all in the South. Didn't Mel's friend on his day tell us that we're part of America, like it or not? He did indeed. But in surprising degree, Southerners have maintained the easy informality based on the sense that underlies all codes of manners. The sense that others have a claim on us. That we can't and shouldn't act as though we can do anything we please. It wasn't so long ago that we worried about that enemy and ruthlessness taking control. We're out here now. Now that's a Yankee word, if I ever heard one. This sense of ruthlessness and distance from the culture of which we're part, alienation, antagonism toward it. Southerners don't know what that is. Not when they're thinking about who they are, where they live, where they came from. And amazingly, it isn't even a racial thing. A recent newspaper story that I happened across just a few days ago provides a good example. It broadened our minds considerably. The University of Florida's Kappa Alpha chapter has a black member. Why is he there? Kappa Alpha, of all Southern institutions. Well, hold on, because what he says is he is there because of Honor and Robert E. Lee. Or it's Robert. He says if you hang around here, they're always talking about Lee. What he stood for is what we stand for. You conduct yourself as a gentleman at all times. That's colorblind. It sure is. And that's what I like about the South. Even better than hot cornbread and black-eyed peas and turnip leaves. The notion's still alive here that you show what you are, who you are, by the way you treat other people. By the civility that you owe them as fellow members of the human race, of your region, your place of birth, your country. That's what we are as Southerners. That's what we believe. And that's what we like about the South. And I wonder if we haven't got something here the nation needs. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we did. This sense of civility, this sense of connectedness to other people, the sense of obligation due to others whom we may not know, whose opinions we may not respect, but whom we understand have a relationship to us by virtue of the life and the breath that they share with us as human beings. That's what we have in the South. And I think increasingly we are going to find that Americans elsewhere in these troublous times, the 1990s, will understand that what we have here in the South is good and valid and seasonable, and that the sooner that they appropriate it for themselves, the better off that they will be. What else do I like about the South? Religion. Religion. And I don't mean the arm waving and the snake handling, the whooping and the hollering and the falling on the ground. I mean the God acknowledgement. God. It's a funny thing about that old fellow. He's still in Agnes. Rural crossroads, the urban alleys, the apartment blocks, the trailer parks, from Newport News to Guthrie to Lampasas. think it's that we seem to like it, and so we keep him there. By and large, wrote Flannery O'Connor, people in the South still conceive of humanity in theological terms. And this bears a little bit on my original point. We are people of civility, decency toward others. We understand the maturity of God. We understand that He created us, and He created us for a destiny which we are just dimly beginning to apprehend. And not that we're a little bit afraid of Him. It's this wonderful God who we keep around our houses and our bones. You have to be a little afraid of someone or something so big, so powerful. And not just a little bit impressed at the same time, the time you're so tender, so merciful. What's God got to do with it? As it happens, that's the question the 20th century has been asking for decades, with rising exasperation in its voice. Just what's He got to do with anything? And why should we care anyway? I wrote special interest pleading, if you don't mind, in that classic of world literature to which Camden has already kindly alluded today, just published by Thomas Nelson, bearing my name on the cover. The decline of religious belief in our time is at center stage. Not so much flight from the churches, flight takes energy, as lazy indifference to the churches. The great Sunday morning snore. Could that be what we have before us today? I think possibly so. But whatever the cause, the consequences are large, plain, and staring. Western civilization has become unhooked from God. The vertical view, you and I looking up to heaven and saying, yes, Lord, what will you have of us? What do you want us to do? A deer no longer obtains. What we have given way to is good democratic horizontalism. All people on the same plane. All values on the same plane. All ideas on the same plane. Everything on the same plane. The good, the bad, the ugly, the lovely, the true, the false. Subject to democratic referendum. By virtue of the democratic pluralism which we have imported from the political sphere. Now, because absence of God restrains us, because God restrained us, when we sought His counsel and wisdom as to what we must do, then we finally have to ask, in the absence of God, what restrains us, what holds us back from enacting the law of the jungle. Our respect for our fellow creatures, because they're big boys, and they can look after themselves in a good democratic fashion. Well, the cat's away, the mice are away. The mice, it turns out, have, or rats. Soon enough, the timbers of our civilization bear their teeth marks. The concept of morality is as obedience to God, and the guardrails He patiently set out for us is judged also very laughable. Where our forefathers just too quaint for words, all that handing over of will and appetite to a party they couldn't even see. As for a day, we have every man his own moralist. Even in the South, you say? Well, surely not the South. What goes on outside the South? Goes on inside the self as well. That we have to acknowledge and realize. But not at the same pace and not with the same intensity. The Christ-haunted South, as Flannery O'Connor called it. Listens with excitement, not unmixed with apprehension. For the divine footstep, the rustling of the underbrush that portends the coming of God. That's what I like about the South. That's what I think the rest of this country will understand that it too likes about the South. In this time of anemia and anxiety and restlessness, spiritual restlessness, and incapacity to find home, it will increasingly look to the South as a place where misunderstanding has been, if not perfected, at least maintained through difficult decades. Witness to the truth born even today by people in this allegedly barren and godforsaken land. That's what we like about the South. I like one thing more about the South. Southern politics has been there. That's a hard admission made in the era of Bill Clinton and Al Gore. But these two gentlemen don't stop to tell the story. Indeed, they don't understand the story. It's a tale not of politics, a spectator sport, but it's commitment. Commitment to what? Commitment to restraint and to freedom. A pair of virtues that are not as opposite as they seem. Restraint means holding back. We gladly enough upon this. Yes, we can do this thing, but do we need it? Can we afford it? Is it good for us? Will we live to regret it? The Southern politician is more likely to ask such hedging, heckling questions than his counterparts from elsewhere in the country. And this knows, Mel Bradford knew it, that our politicians land us in trouble every so often. We've had Dick Russell, but also Bill Bowen Hedren. We've had Harry Burr Sr., but also Huey Long and J. William Fulbright. We've had Tom Connelly. We've also had Lyndon Johnson, who was a client of Dick Russell, by the way, promoted to the higher reaches of the Senate leadership by this man whom my fellow Texans so sorely deceived. But the defining aspect, the defining characteristic of Southern politics, it seems to me after 30 years of covering Southern politics, and after 20 odd years of knowing Mel Bradford, is a skepticism about means and ends. And that skepticism is founded on understanding that politics isn't life, that life is personal, not political. That you can't legislate so as to account for the variety and the dimension of human life. You better keep the government out of it as much as you can. You better keep human affairs free and loose insofar as you can. And so you don't find a Southern politician, the kind Mel Bradford celebrated in his writings, clamoring to make the nation over, much less the world. That's why William Jefferson Clinton is such a scandal. He thinks, or well, someone very close to him thinks, that we're clamoring for the great plans, for the great vision. Wow. We're clamoring for improvement in the school down the street. And we're clamoring for the right to walk the streets in safety. After dark. We're crying for the right to be, in the words of that great Southerner, G.K. Chesterton, our potty little selves. And that's what I like about the South. It's what Mel Bradford liked about it. And not just the two of us, I think. You don't have to be Southern to like freedom and community. It's enough just to be centered in this center. That's all of us, Southern, Northern, wondering how we get out of this that we have made. Well, we can do a lot worse than look south. The South is no earthly paradise, and religion to which we give obedience and acquiescence readily assures us of this. But the sense of obligation to others, as reflected in manners, the sense of obligation to God, manifested in a in a Bible-thumping Baptist revival, or in a High Church Episcopalian Eucharist, with smoking bells. But since the band wasn't created for politics, but politics for man, if the nation, the republic, doesn't mean those things right now, what does it mean? Bell Bradford, senator, knew as well as any man alive, better than most, that the South isn't the domain of morons who marry their sisters, or husbands who con their brothers, or cross-burning racist or splenetic demagogues, although we have had types of each of these in our lore and in our history. But the South is an idea of who we humans are, who we free-born Americans are. An idea too largely ignored in this sad, sorrowful time in which we happen to find ourselves present, but whose chains we are straining against, even as we ponder the great legacy of the great Melvin Bradford, who shows us the light in this dark time. We're headed for resurrection, I think, my friends. And the time of resurrection is very near. It's very dark outside. Not unlike that Saturday in the Near East a couple of thousand years ago, when it seemed that everything was over and that nothing again would be any good. I think our society, whether or not America represents the fulfillment of God's plan for the human race, whether the South represents the fulfillment of God's plan for America, we are headed away relentlessly, straight away from these times which we find so unbearable and so insufferable and so unbearable. We're heading toward a time of light and away from the time of darkness. And that's what we like about the South. Bell Bradford and his humble memorialist who stands before you today, and all of his stable friends and admirers who are gathered here today in a force that does him proud and makes glad the hearts of those of us who love him, and would that he were with us today. I had the honor to be his friend. I have the honor to believe that he was right. And I have the honor to believe that he will, in the time that is coming, be vindicated. And I thank you very much.